Hello, everyone. I'm Abby Kinney, and you are listening to UpZone. Got my bus pass, been a ride, first class, street car downtown, with a fine ladies in the peeps are OG's head. Don't hurt nobody. Look at this damn thing, got my fit on. Hello, everyone, and thank you for listening to another episode of UpZoned, where we take one big story from the news each week and we upzone it. We talk about it in depth. My name is Abby Kinney, and I am a planning consultant with Gould Evans. Normally, I would be recording this from our Kansas City office, but as everyone knows, there's a lot going on in the world right now, and all Gould Evans offices have officially converted to remote working since last Monday for the foreseeable future. It is a first for many of us, but we have an incredibly talented staff of tech professionals that have quickly helped us to get up and running this week. So I'm recording this episode from my kitchen with my dog and my cat present. So if you hear my dog or a train or church bells or people working on construction projects in the neighborhood, my apologies. My neighborhood is a wonderful place, but is also anything but quiet. So today I'm joined by our friend and founder of the Strong Towns organization, Chuck Marone. I've seen a lot of really great content that has been written by you and the Strong Towns staff this week that has been an uplifting contribution each day. So I wanted to let you know that I and many other people, I'm sure, really appreciate your insights and forward-thinking stories in a time like this. Before we get started, I just want to ask how you've been doing this week, Chuck.
Hey, thank you. And it's really nice to talk to you. And don't worry about the dog noises and the cats and the church bells. Those are all beautiful. Those are all beautiful sounds of life. And I think we should hear those and celebrate them. I'm doing very well. Working from home is not a transition for any of us. It's the way our team works. I think our big adjustment has been we tend to, because of how we work, kind of program things out in advance. You know, we have this long content calendar and stuff we're working on, and it's actually kind of a machine in terms of how it works. And so to take that machine and essentially like stick a rod in the axle and bring it to a halt and then redirect it in a different way, it's been an all hands on deck kind of experience. Difficulty, in my opinion, brings out the best in most people. These kind of times make people intuitively grateful for what they have and generous to others. That has been my experience today. It was my experience back in 9/11. It was my experience even in 2008. You know, people want to help each other and want to be there and help each other get through. Our team, I've watched them say, okay, how can we do the best to help people today? The idea of showing people what is possible, what other people are doing, giving people ideas for how they can react and how they can make a positive difference in their community. That was something that immediately was like, let's make sure we do that, because there are so many people out there doing amazing things. And there's so many people out there kind of asking like, what could I do? And we just wanted to marry those two as quickly as we could. Like, let's get as many of these, here's what this state is doing. Here's what this community is doing. Here's what this place is doing. Right now, today, it kind of goes back to the old Strong Towns mantra. You know, we all got to do what we can. And not all of us are going to be doctors, and not all of us are going to be paramedics and frontline people. And that's great. And you know, we need to support them. But I don't think that's the expectation. Not all of us are going to be at the, you know, whatever briefing or making whatever big decision. But all of us can do stuff, right? All of us can help make things a little bit better. So, thank you.
Of course. And I, you know, you guys have been cranking out the content this week, and it's just been really great to see that, see everybody on your staff putting out their insights and sharing stories. And it's been mostly pretty uplifting to read that content. So I'm glad that it's one source in kind of the endless stream of media right now that, you know, has been uplifting, at least to me.
Can I give you a personal story?
Yeah.
One thing I do kind of lament right now, you've been following us along this winter, and we just went through this long hiring process where we brought on three new people. We brought on one part-time person who's a bookkeeper. We brought on one person who's doing full-time communication with us, and then one person who's helping with development work. They all started last week and this week. So you kind of like to bring new people in and have them, you know, have a ramp up time and let's help you get acclimated. And let me take like a whole day and walk you through, because we are remote. So like last week we were all together in Florida for the most part, because we were doing some training and also having just our routine staff retreat. We cut that early and everybody like fled home. And so I feel bad because, you know, we've got these delightful new people. They're just wonderful. They're just amazing. They're being thrown, in a sense, into the fire. Like, right,
yeah.
Like this is an all hands on deck, like five alarm fire going off here. Like, everybody, we need you. And I think the amazing thing to me has been, and this is a personal anecdote, just how well they've responded. Like I told them, I'm like, you guys have had a tough week and you've been awesome. So yeah, it's very cool.
A lot of people right now, I think, are experiencing one form of adaptation or another. You know, I was thinking the other day about somebody I know who just became a nurse, like literally just graduated, and it's just being like thrown into the fire. And this is the opportunity to show what we've got, you know, in situations like these. It's been great to see and great to see positivity coming out of this current situation, which is very fluid right now, obviously.
Right. Well, and for us, the thing that we're, besides connecting people who want to do stuff with inspiration for doing it, the big thing that we've been focused on all week, and that has been keeping me up, you know, all night and getting up early, has been what comes next. Today, there's a story out that I saw, and not to freak everybody out, but I think like this is where we're at. It just said like, this is not a recession. This is not going to be a depression. This is going to be like an economic winter. We're entering a place where the economy has never been. In the depression, we had 25% unemployment, but it didn't happen all at once. It happened over a period of time. We had, you know, the economy shrink by 10, 12%, like a big, we're talking about a 25% increase overnight. This is record-breaking stuff in a cataclysmic kind of way. And we just recognize, I mean, kind of our whole insight here is that the strength of our country, the strength of our economy comes from our cities. It comes from our towns and our neighborhoods. It comes from the productive interactions of individuals and businesses and families and you know, people doing things at the local level. And so to the extent that we're going to rebuild this, it's not going to come from bailing out the airlines. It's not going to come from bailing out casinos. It's not going to come from, you know, pumping money through banks and giving small businesses the capacity to borrow even more money, you know, already indebted people be able to borrow more money. It's going to actually come from us on Main Street adapting and changing how we do things and basically leading. And that doesn't mean just mayors and city councils, although I think they have a strong role to play here. It's not going to mean just the Rotary Club president. I mean, it's going to mean all of us at the local level, like picking up the pieces here and putting it all back together. I think we recognize that on the one hand, it's the only way it's going to work. But two, I'm not going to say we're not ready for this, but there are things that we can do as a movement, as a conversation, to actually help people be even more ready for it, you know, to like seize that moment and go forth and actually make things better for people in a way that doesn't just get us through this crisis, but actually makes us better permanently. So,
well, I think that's a great segue into the article that we're talking about today, actually. So I actually found this article this morning, and picking an article this week was very challenging just because there's so much noise in the media space right now. And I guess I should say, because this is such a fluid situation, I want to make listeners aware that this is being recorded on Friday, March 20th. We usually release these episodes a couple of days later. So depending on what happens, it could be a totally different situation in a couple of days. It seems to change by the hour. But today's article that I found this morning was published in The Atlantic by Lizzie O'Leary, and it is entitled "The Modern Supply Chain is Snapping. The coronavirus exposes the fragility of an economy built on outsourcing and just-in-time inventory." I chose this article because it touches on a topic that we hear a lot about at Strong Towns, which is anti-fragility. The concept of anti-fragility comes from an economist named Nassim Taleb and his book entitled "Anti-Fragile: Things That Gain from Disorder." At Strong Towns, you often talk about how cities must find ways to become more anti-fragile at the local level through feedback loops. And this article seems to really uncover how fragile we've become at the macro scale due to the global nature of our supply chains. For example, the Institute of Supply Management found that nearly 75% of the companies that it contacted in the last month has reported some kind of supply chain disruption due to this coronavirus pandemic. I kind of want to start with that and ask you a little bit to explain the concept of anti-fragility and how the fragility of our systems at the local, state, national, and now global scale are being exposed.
Yeah. Taleb's concept of anti-fragile starts with the idea of what is fragile. And fragile is something that, when it's exposed to disorder, falls apart, it breaks. When we look at supply chains today, international supply chains, they are incredibly fragile. The idea that, you know, we would, for example, get our prescription drugs made in China, something we absolutely have to have. When you look at the supply chain this goes through from, you know, getting the resources, shipping them to China, having it manufactured in China, all the steps that have to be taken then to get that supply to the United States and get it distributed, it touches many, many, many hands. Something like over 24 different parts in the supply chain, you know, 24 different hands in a sense, or entities in a supply chain to provide you with what is essentially something. If you have a donor, a kidney or a donor heart or lung, like, you have to have this medication. There are people who need this stuff. And we have these long, now complex supply chains. This is fragile. The idea of anti-fragile comes from this notion that what is the opposite of fragility? What is the opposite of being fragile? And most people say, well, we'd be resilient or robust. And Nassim Taleb points out, like, robust just means you can take a hit and keep on going. Anti-fragile is actually something that gets stronger the more stress it's subjected to. When that disorder takes down the fragile system, the anti-fragile system becomes stronger. If you think of, like, your bones actually need to be subjected to a certain amount of stress. If you don't walk, if you're sedentary, if you don't stress your bones anyway, they will start to atrophy and fall apart. They actually get stronger when you give them a little bit of stress. Now, stress them too much and they'll break. But the reality is that they actually get stronger when you stress them a little bit. It goes with exercise. Fasting is this way. People who routinely fast actually see a better immune system response, see better metabolism. They're just in general a little bit healthier. That's because you're subjecting the body to a little bit of stress. It responds to that. When we look at cities are, in their essence, anti-fragile systems. They're systems that, when we look at the way they've been assembled for thousands of years, have a certain, like, inner robustness to them, but also are constructed in such a way that they actually get stronger as things get a little bit more stressful. The ongoing kind of stress creates this stronger bond within them. They get stronger and more resilient over time. What we have done, and I think, like, this is the sad thing, is that we have taken now 70 years of a different experimental approach to building cities. And what we're exposing now today is that this is ridiculously fragile. We are as fragile as the national economy. We are as fragile as the supply chains, because we've allowed ourselves to become, in a sense, part of that system. Can I give you one example? And this one is the one that was, like, spinning around in my head today. We're hearing about, like, businesses suffering because they can't make the rent. And if you think of, like, you know, I'm looking here at, like, the local you know, Wendy's or the donut shop, you know, the Dunkin' Donuts or what have you. These places are, they're renting places or they have loans. They need to make these rent payments or they're going to, you know, lose the space, default on their loan, what have you. I was thinking about the little chocolate shop we've got in the downtown, which is in a building that could, you know, it could be a coffee shop, it could be a restaurant, it could be a clothier, it could be whatever. I was just thinking about this place today because I know the owner. She's a sweet, sweet woman. I really like her a lot. And I actually was like, I want to go get some chocolate because I want to like help her out. She owns her spot. It's been in her family for a long, long time. Now, she has some cash flow, obviously. She's got to pay taxes on that. She's got to pay property taxes. It's Minnesota, so she's not going to be able to turn the heat down, you know, below 40 and without having pipes freeze and other things. But the reality is if we get this shelter in place order, which, you know, seems like it might be coming here, it's certainly come to other states, she could actually shut that building down, walk away from it, and essentially like resume when things pick back up. And there would be a little bit of hit, but there's no like, she's not in default. It's not a catastrophe. Essentially, she is just a little ma and pa hand-me-down resilient kind of business. The kind we think of as like this historic, you know, oh, isn't that cute? Isn't that sweet kind of thing? The reality is that's what cities used to be built on.
It's incredibly tough.
It's incredibly tough. Yeah. It's one of these things that can like take a big sucker punch and it's not going to collapse. It's not going to go away. That Dunkin' Donuts out on the edge is part of this, not only this massive supply chain, which itself is, you know, very fragile, but it's part of this whole debt-based economic system where if payments don't get made on time, the whole thing starts to collapse. I think that we're going to rediscover here that there is a tremendous amount of value that we've overlooked and kind of relegated to the, oh, isn't that sweet? Isn't that cute kind of category of economic development when these things are actually the backbone, like the foundation of a stable local economy?
Yeah. I mean, just taking walks in my neighborhood this week and looking at all of these small buildings and small businesses that, you know, many of them are owned by people who live in the neighborhood. I've been kind of wondering if that type of situation is going to be able to take a hit over sort of the more nationalized corporate model of real estate ownership in our cities and what that means in terms of sort of working with the people who are renting space.
Right, right. They're going to try to bail all that out and we'll see.
Yeah.
To me, if we're writing $1 trillion checks and bailing people out, and I'm not trying to be a populist here, but the idea of giving money to people as opposed to the airlines or the McDonald's corporation, it's just a matter of like, do you want to double down on what is clearly like very fragile? And this is the second time in a dozen years and the third time in 20 years that we've essentially been induced into these big money bailouts of fragile players. Or do we migrate to a different model? And to me, the different model is this very bottom-up one.
It seems obvious that there is going to be different models that come out of this situation. And something that I've been thinking about recently is the fact that people seemingly seem to struggle with accepting change, but they're also incredibly adaptable in times of chaos. I've just been thinking about kind of chaotic situations that have happened throughout the course of history. And the optimist in me wants to see this as an opportunity for us to really rethink our economic systems at all scales. I think more and more people are now recognizing how fragile all these networks have become and are asking the valid question about why we've all chosen to sacrifice stability for the purpose of efficiency, which is something that you wrote about earlier this week, calling for us to all kind of stop valuing efficiency and start valuing resilience. I think now's the time for us to start thinking about what it means to be resilient, not only at the local level, but really at all levels. What does it mean at this global scale?
I do too. The fine line that I've found myself walking this week is, you know, wanting to go back and like repost half the stories I've written over the last decade. Like, look, I was saying this, like, look, listen, come on. And then saying, okay, now we're here. What do we do? And the analogy that we've, you know, that we've used and that we've used for a long time, but I think is very apropos right now, is don't focus on the last truck that went over the rickety bridge. The last truck that went over the rickety bridge, you can say, well, that truck took down the bridge. And no, it's the fact that you built a really rickety bridge that was the problem. And so, yes, is the coronavirus a black swan? Maybe. Lots of people saw it coming. Certainly, I think if you were a little bit aware, you could have seen what was happening in China. You certainly could have seen what was happening in Italy, in the Middle East, you know, like Iran, and said, well, you know, hey, this seems to be spreading. But, you know, the reality is, I think what will be written about this episode is going to be partially that this pandemic hit us very suddenly. But I think what will most likely be written, particularly in the economic textbooks, is that we got ourselves into a really, really fragile place. This just revealed that to us. I mean, we built a very rickety bridge. I think the challenge for us now is to not build a rickety bridge. I mean, how do we create systems that are bottom up, have really good feedback, are very robust, grow stronger over time as they're subject to stress? Here's the thing. We know how to do this. Humans have been doing it for thousands of years. It's called the traditional city. We've built them all over the world. So let's just do that. And, you know, we'll be a lot better off.
I have a lot of hope that we can figure out how to do that again. We may have lost how to sort of build the traditional human settlements for the past 70 years, but it's the way that we've lived for thousands of years before this, before we started kind of selling our whole way of life out essentially for the sake of efficiency. I think more and more people this week are kind of asking the question of, wait, why is this made in China? Why is this made in this country? And why can't we get the things that we expect in day-to-day life without it having to go through several different sets of hands all across the globe? To me, that is just a fragile system that is becoming exposed. And I think a lot of people are realizing that that isn't going to work.
Well, I hope people will keep coming back here, because this is the conversation we're going to have on Upzoned. It's a conversation we're going to have on the Strong Towns podcast. It's the Little Things has always talked about all the stuff people can do at the local level and are doing. And, you know, our whole content stream now is really kicking into gear and going to help people not just like look back and say, okay, here's what we should have done differently, but take this next step and say, all right, now that we're going to rebuild this stuff, how do we do it? I'm getting up every day and this is tough. My wife is a reporter with public radio. You know, she's out there talking to people and traveling and doing stuff that, you know, is needed at this time for people, but also is a little stressful for the rest of the family here. You know, my kids are teenagers and they're taking this kind of rough, you know, they're old enough to understand what they're missing and what's going on. But they're young, they're young enough to not really have much agency in it. This is a tense time for people. I think it's also time for us, you know, now to really sit down and say, okay, while we're sheltering in place, while we're thinking about life and the gratitude we have, how do we think about the future we want to rebuild?
This is an opportunity for everybody to contemplate that, I think, and to figure out how they could be a leader in any way.
Yeah. And I'm optimistic about that. I mean,
me too.
There's no doubt it will mean giving up some things. I don't know what those things will be. I think the idea that we will have cheap plastic crap from China on demand, maybe one of them. And you know what? I think I can live with that.
Right.
but it might also mean a lot of things that are very beautiful that we've not stopped to take notice of, that now will become front and center. And I think that will, I think we might find ourselves better people. That's my optimism about this time.
That I completely agree with you. And, you know, it's good to stay optimistic in times like these. we're running a little bit over time, so I kind of want to just transition into the down zone. Chuck, if you have any thing you've been reading or listening to or anything at all that you'd like to share for this week, I know that it's been a heck of a week. So if you don't have anything to share, that's okay too.
I have not. I have actually been working until I like literally shut the computer off and fell asleep and then get up and go. And so I feel a little bad because I have not, I've been telling people like, take care of yourself. I've been telling my daughter, like, you need to get out of bed in the morning. You can't sleep till noon. She's a teenager. So that's what she likes to do anyway. And I'm like, come on, let's keep at it. I will say one thing I've been listening to in the shower and other places, like in between things, there's a guy named Chris Martinson. I interviewed him on the podcast a while back. He runs a website called Peak Prosperity. He has been running now for about 2 months, a daily update on coronavirus. This is a guy who not only was a CFO of a Fortune 500 company, he like really gets the economic side of this, but his background is in chemistry and biochem, and he gets like, he is a pathology, virology expert in many ways. And he's like the earliest person reporting on this stuff to me with credibility. And so I've just found myself listening to him every day for like an update on where we're at and what's going on. You can get that on YouTube. If you just go to YouTube and type in Peak Prosperity, you'll get his daily video updates. And they sometimes are a little dark, but I think ultimately what it is it's telling you exactly what's going on. And I kind of appreciate the fact that this guy's been way out in front of the curve, like way out in front of it.
Well, I'll definitely be following that then, because again, there's so much going on in the media space right now. It's hard to keep up with who to follow and what's going on. So I'll be looking forward to looking that up after we get off this call. So for me, I've actually been spending a lot of time this week just taking walks and thinking. Again, there's a lot of media being thrown at everybody right now that it can be kind of overwhelming. So it's been kind of nice just to unplug and walk around my neighborhood and, of course, practicing social distancing and kind of getting to know some of my neighbors. We all have a bunch of like balconies and things like the little porches. So everybody's out on their porches talking to each other from across the streets, which has been nice. I'm going to age myself, but I was actually barely a teenager when the financial downturn began in the mid-2000s. So I was probably like your daughter's ages. So for me, this is really like the first crisis that I've ever experienced in my adult life. Because I was so young during 9/11 and the housing crash, I don't have the experience of witnessing what the outcomes of these types of situations are. And I am pretty comforted by the fact that I do think that people can bounce back from tragedy, you know, even if that means that our lives might change in many ways. So that's really my contribution to the down zone this week. It's not anything very solid, but just a lot of time for contemplation.
I think it's beautiful. I've said how I've been kind of burning the candle at both ends. That's not fully true. With the family here, we've actually taken every day and had lunch together, and every day and we sit down and have dinner together. And I've been making those meals for everybody. So that's been very fun. And then every night we've been watching the Harry Potter movies together in order. So we sit down and we watch like an hour and a half of Harry Potter every night. And we all snuggle on the couch and do that as a family. I read this book years ago, and I don't remember the name of it, but the premise of it is they interviewed people about the Great Depression who had lived through it. And they interviewed them during the Great Depression, and then they interviewed them decades later. And people reported their peak happiness as being corresponding with the depths of the Great Depression. And when they delved into why, the reasons were because all of a sudden the things that mattered most were what mattered most. You ate meals together. You spent time with your family. You didn't have money to, you know, covet something that you wanted to buy. And so you focused your energies on playing a board game with someone you cared about and just enjoying that kind of time. And we're trying to lean into that as a family and say, okay, we felt this time slipping away, you know, with our daughters who are getting older and our one is in ninth grade and she's got 3 years of school left and then she's going to be moving on. And they're so busy with dance and activities and friends. They hardly have time to sit and spend time with us. And my wife and I are just like, let's lean into this. Like, let's make this a time we remember.
I think leaning into this is going to be a common theme for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
And that can be a beautiful thing. So thank you all for listening to another episode of Upzoned. Keep doing what you can to build a strong town. Thanks. Let me show you what I'm about to do. I'm about to get out. Hit the town tonight. Oh, I'm about to get down tonight. Hit the town tonight. Oh, I'm about to get down tonight. Get out. Hit the town tonight. Oh, I'm about to get down tonight.